You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. Criminal justice reform has been part of the national conversation for several years now. And here in Idaho, the American Civil Liberties Union has been lobbying officials to take a closer look at things like mandatory minimums, prison overcrowding, and employment opportunities after people serve their time. Well, now the organization has released a report that digs into the specific challenges with Idaho's prison system. And as the 2020 legislative session kicks off, the group is looking to lawmakers to make meaningful change. Joining us live in studio today to talk more are Ruby Mendez-Mota and Jeremy Woodson of the ACLU of Idaho. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So before we dig into this report you recently released, I do want to listen back to a clip of Governor Brad Little during his State of the State address on Monday.
We must address our ongoing prison population in new ways. My budget calls for a new resource called Connection and Intervention Stations. They will offer support, treatment, and accountability for the people on community supervision who need it most. Meanwhile, I'm seeking continuing investments in community reentry centers where inmates returning to our neighborhoods can learn job and life skills.
Now, after that part of the speech, the governor received applause from lawmakers who were gathered there. Little is recommending almost $6 million for this proposal, plus another $2.7 million for a new reentry center in Twin Falls. I want to know what your take on the governor's proposal is. And who would like to start?
I think I can jump in. I think, the proposals, they do sound really good. And we know that reentry centers are very transformative for folks coming back home and reintegrating into the community post-incarceration. What I would add to that is, we've tried to speak with on-the-ground advocates and folks who are actually impacted by Idaho's criminal justice system. Indeed, folks who I've also had to return home and ask them about what their struggles are. And certainly there are some things they've mentioned that could be addressed as it relates to those reentry centers. But one thing that we've also found is that even with having some of those skills, even with being able to locate places where they can get hired, they're still struggling to get past kind of the stigma of having been incarcerated. So what that means is even with those skills, even with being able to have some coaching on even the processes of interviewing and applying for new employment, there is still a stigma piece that is there that they are experiencing that's limiting their access to the job market once they return home. And there's a lot of ways that we think that we can address that issue as well.
So talk to me about how you would kind of address something like that, because you're right, that's a stigma. And unless we can overcome that, don't you think we will continue down the same path when it comes to people who have done their time, who have even gone through these programs?
Yeah, absolutely. Something that we have been focusing at the ACLU of Idaho is working with this community to really share their stories, their experiences, and really highlighting that they are family members, they are community members, that they are contributing in some part to the society, but yet they do face these barriers. And that's where we believe that the Fair Chance Employment Policy really comes in, that if we start passing policy such as this, it provides an avenue for them to really put forth their skills rather than that label that they usually have when it comes down to the application that says I have been previously convicted.
I want to talk a little bit about your report, because according to the report you put out, probation and parole violations are a major cause of incarceration. In fact, I know during Governor Little's State of the State address, I believe he said 62% of our prison population are parole and probation violations, and it's the highest in the country. So what do you think is going on there? And again, proposals for fixing this.
Ruby, you want to go ahead?
Sure. So what our blueprint really does, it provides an overview of who's being incarcerated and what's keeping them in there. And so our blueprint provides a huge menu of different reforms that really provide solutions that lawmakers can do to be able to fix the recidivism rate. We understand employment is a huge one that a lot of individuals that we have spoken to, but also housing is another issue where, you know, where they can't find some kind of employment, they also can't provide sufficient pay for rent. And so it's kind of like a domino effect where they find a barrier on a certain issue, it bars them from being able to progress in any way within the society.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd add to that, you know, this really is a multi-layered effect. So when we're looking at parole and probation and talking to folks about what those violations look like, again, there are a multitude of things that come up, employment just being one of them. So if there are ways that we can kind of dig into some of those issues on those violations, in addition to looking at reforms on, you know, whether folks should actually continue to be locked up for some of these violations and digging into what that really looks like as it relates to getting people back in the communities, we think that there could be really profound change there in addition to reducing the prison population, which is the ultimate goal of the Blueprint Report.
Okay, so let's talk about the type of crimes that people are committing that land them behind bars. What is the breakdown, do we know, of violent crimes? Because I think this is also where, you know, the average citizen gets very concerned. You don't want violent criminals within mainstream society.
Sure. And I think that's 100% a valid concern. I guess the piece that I'd like to highlight is that, you know, overwhelmingly folks that actually are going to jail in Idaho, over 90% of them are actually returning back to the community. So, when you think about the types of crimes that are getting folks locked up, those are typically the violent ones. Those are typically longer sentences. They're not maybe having opportunities to come back. And also there are still practices in place as it relates to parole and probation that will make it so we know that there's some supervision for those folks. That's one piece. I think the second piece is that for people, for the rest of folks that are going to be returning home, again, we know that those are a lot of those are parole and probation violations. We can still provide support for those folks that doesn't fly in the face of public safety by any means. When we provide support for people coming back home, that means that we're reducing recidivism. We're actually increasing public safety when we do that. So I guess I want to push back a little bit and remove the kind of which crimes are people getting locked up for in the first place. We do have systems in place to provide proper supervision for those folks when they do get released.
But then we also have systems in place when it comes to sentencing guidelines and how certain crimes you have to do a certain amount of time. These are called mandatory minimums. This would be the fourth year in a row that the Idaho legislature has looked into changes when it comes to drug sentencing. Mm-hmm. Now, every year, no law has been passed. Mm-hmm. We know that Minority Leader Ilana Rubel, she championed this last session. Do you think there might be a chance that this could be different and have a different outcome this year?
I believe that we're definitely looking forward into continue to reintroduce. We understand that there still needs to be conversation made with other stakeholders in regards to mandatory minimums. But what the blueprint really serves is as a highlight to address other reforms that maybe other stakeholders would feel comfortable as a first step, and then kind of addressing to move forward onto hopefully mandatory minimums. And really what we want to also acknowledge is and highlight is that it doesn't only talk about the facts, but also considers that this is also about individuals that are living with mental health issues and also substance abuse and addiction. So that there is a need to consider for folks to be treated prior to being incarcerated.
And let's talk about the population of our incarcerated population, because the imprisonment for African Americans in Idaho prisons was 5 times higher than the rate of white prisoners in 2017. We also have a high rate of women in prisons compared to other states. Why are we seeing this?
To be honest, I think it is an over-reliance on incarceration as a deterrent to crime. We actually know that that doesn't work from the research. There's plenty of research out there around that. And so the question then becomes, what alternatives can we then provide? What support can we then provide? If you look at, as Ruby mentioned, mental health services, that is a huge area where we're seeing a lot of overlap, where folks are being imprisoned and not actually having adequate mental health care. Even before they get in. And then at one point, I do believe that IDOC was one of the largest providers of mental health services. Mm-hmm. So what does that say about how that's intertwined with our criminal justice system and the support that's being provided or lack thereof before they actually get into prison?
So let's also talk about capacity issues, because this is an ongoing problem. And because we have county jails and prisons that are at capacity. The state prison has been sending inmates to Texas because we don't have enough beds in CUNA, where our state prison is. So we also know that building brand new facilities is expensive, and we also don't know if that's the right thing to do. Yet in Twin Falls, for example, prisoners were sleeping on floors, but the city declined to pass a bond to build out that facility in November. Again, is there a solution? And does this potentially come back to what we've talked about? You know, probation and parole, mandatory minimums. I mean, it's easy to say we just need more beds.
Right. We need reforms. We need to start changing how we view our criminal justice system. In order for us to reduce beds, we need to start really highlighting these different kind of proposed policies, and not only the ones that we offer in the blueprint report, but what the community is saying, right? What individuals are impacted by the issue are needing, and what their experiences have. And so it's really for lawmakers and other stakeholders to, you know, really open their ears and heart to hear what this community is needing in order for us to really fix what the problem is, which is the criminal justice system.
Yeah. And I'd also add that, you know, it's really, from our standpoint, one of the reasons why we're really proud of the Blueprint Report is because we know that going into this next session, there might be discussions around new prisons. We also know that we don't have enough beds here. We're sending people out of state. As you mentioned, there's folks sleeping on the ground in some facilities. So for us, it allowed us an opportunity to provide some of the statistics that we've gotten and that we've put together in coordination with the Urban Institute, and then kind of roll out a great list of guideposts for criminal justice reforms that actually get us to reducing the prison population. So then, you know, instead of a new prison being built for lack of other options, we actually have, you know, a whole menu of things that we can start to dig into.
Before I let you go, I want to talk about a bright spot in the report that you highlighted. And this is the Ada County Sheriff's Office, because they received a grant to study reducing incarceration rates and recidivism. What have you learned through that grant and through that work that's been done?
I guess in short that, you know, what needs to be, I guess, at the center of some of these discussions are the folks that are actually going through this process. It's very easy to kind of throw money and to sit down and do some strategic planning and write up contracts for new changes. But if the folks that are actually having to go through that aren't actually at the center of that discussion, aren't at the center of those plans, then we know that things can kind of go awry. And we think that why invest more money and systems that are building up more prisons and more kind of more supervision instead of actually the folks that are going through that. We think that if we support those people, we will see a reduction in our prison population and also an uptick in folks that are able to enter back into the community, really contribute to our thriving economy here in Idaho, and support communities in a better way.
Well, and one thing that I know that came out of the MacArthur Foundation, which is this Ada County Sheriff's Office, when they received this grant, it was something very simple, which was send a text message to people when they have a court date. Because if you miss a court date, that is sometimes in violation of your probation, and then you will end up going to jail. And in fact, a person on that who was a part of that said, if my hairdresser can send an alert to me the day before, why can't we? And we know through data that more people are now showing up for court dates. So it's simple sometimes fixes that we forget about.
Yeah. Right? And I'm actually glad that you bring that up, because we hear kind of those simple fixes all the time. And I would argue that oftentimes we learn that by talking with the people who are directly impacted, right? If we dig into actually some of the reasons why folks are having problems or returning to jail, oftentimes it can be some of those simple things that we can address really quickly.
I want to thank both of you for coming in today. If people want to read your blueprint report, can they find it online?
Yep. It will be up by the end of today, actually, at ACLUIdaho.org, and it'll be under our resources tab.
We've been talking with Ruby Mendez-Mota and Jeremy Woodson of the ACLU Idaho. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Idaho Matters.